This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Good morning, Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and thanks for coming back and listening to these reports. I've been getting a lot of really good texts and messages and emails from people. I know that you are listening and to this out there in podcast listening land, and Instagram messages that I've been receiving too, so thank you guys very much. I'm glad you enjoy the reports, and so it's been fun going around and putting these things together despite the lack of sleep, but we'll catch up next year or sometime in the future on sleep. But anyhow, today is September the 5th, and this is the last full day of activities for the Texas Association of Magicians here in Austin. Tomorrow's going to be a half day. We'll report on that again later. We're soon getting ready for the first thing this morning after the regular board meeting is going to be actually an overlap a little bit. We're going to be having the close-up contest, which will be overlapping then with Bizarro's lecture. But I thought we'd kind of do a little bit of a recap, first of all, with the guy who is my color coordinator. You wouldn't know it by looking at what he's wearing this morning, but he's not color coordinated. Well, actually, I'm kidding. The red shirt matches your eyes. So,
no joke about that, I tell you.
And you could recognize that voice maybe from his red nose he used to wear under right. Another pseudonym of with the guy with the big feet, the clown, for a hamburger corporation, Mr. Dal Sanders. Hey, Dal.
Hey, how you doing, Scott? I'm surprised to see you up this early, but I'm even more surprised to see me up this early.
Yes. Well, we have a full day of activities, a lot of things going on, and I thought, again, since we kind of did a recap a little bit of the night before show yesterday, we can do one again. We'll catch up again tomorrow morning and do this again all over.
Sounds
about
like
tonight's show. But as for last night, let's talk a little bit about the gala that we had. It was hosted by
Peter the Adequate. And it's actually started. This was so cool to be here in Austin because I got to have dinner with my two sons. Cindy and I got to have dinner with our sons last night, and that was awesome. And we finished a great Mexican meal and then came straight into a great show.
Yeah.
Fantastic show.
Completely energized and ready to go.
Yeah, that's right. Two margaritas will do that for you. Mm-hmm. But it started with Peter the Adequate, who did a great job with the SpongeBob.
Let me stop you there before you do, because there was actually something that was preceded that was not part of it, in which they showed a video of this lady playing a guitar. I wish I could remember what her name was, but it's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't remember her name either.
No, it was somebody he had seen apparently online, and Peter had corresponded with this young lady, and she said, well, I'm putting together a video, and it just so happened they had completed it and sent it to her that morning, and it was an acoustic guitar about magicians don't tell, the secrets or something. You know. Anyhow, it was a great opening, and then Peter came out and did a rope trick.
Yeah. We'll try to find that video and get it on your site.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Peter did SpongeBob,
which he's always, that's one of the most flawless SpongeBob acts ever. Followed by Magical Mystical Michael, or maybe it's Mystical Magical Michael, or like you said earlier, the 3M guy.
The 3M magician, yes, right.
And that was followed by Peter coming back and doing rope escape.
I want to say something about Michael also, because what he was doing was very entertaining, kind of a street magic type of thing, but he had this huge trunk that looked like it was going to be a sub-trunk kind of a thing, and then had a lady from the audience come up, long story short, dropped the four sides of it as she was lying prone on top of the box, and did basically a suspension. And then he put the sides back up, and then she walked off the stage, and they had a Polaroid photo taken. Anyhow, that was very clever. I'd never seen that particular kind of illusion before, which he was just laying in this large box, and then the four sides going down, then passing a hoop over. But entertaining and different.
And everybody likes different, especially at a magic convention.
Peter came back with a
rope tie. And that was followed by Austin's favorite son, I think, Brian Brushwood.
Yeah.
So
doing Mr. Happy Pants.
Well, and of all people he brought up Cindy.
Cindy who?
Cindy Sanders, my wife. So she got up and she did Mr. Happy Pants with Brian Brushwood, and that sounds terrible, but you need to go see the show, okay?
I'm envious because she got the T-shirt.
Yes, well, I think she wanted the T-shirt. I think that's why she agreed to do it. So
Cindy.
Yes. But the great part there was seeing him improv a little bit when his mic went out. You know, he had a
handheld mic,
and he accidentally turned it off and couldn't get Mr. Happy Pants' voice to come on and couldn't get the mic to come on at all. It was a self-problem. And then he was hilarious with that. It was a great piece of improv. It shows what a professional he really is to be able to just keep everything going and keep everything. I mean, a lot of people would just die at that spot. But Brian was funny and kept it going, and I really thought that was great. So I just my little view there.
Particularly since he realized, oh, it was my fault. It wasn't a tech issue. I, in my excitement, I pushed the button and turned it off, and he was blaming, thinking somebody else. No, it was all me. I'm sorry.
Like half a dozen tech people rushed out on stage, and they were checking plugs and everything, and, oh, oops, it's me. My bad. So that was good. That was followed by Cody Fisher. And Cody, another Austin guy. And, gosh, I just realized a lot of the shows last night were Austin people. And he was great, as always, and started off pissing off magicians. That's always fun.
With his parody on lecture notes,
yes,
which he's known for among magicians.
And I wonder if that plays in the real world or if that
probably
just
not
plays for us. And followed by Paul Prater, who came up, and he was very serious and had the voice and everything, and did some really nice pendant work or
pendulum
work, yes.
Yeah, with some Zender cards, and he kind of gave it a foretaste of what the TOM After Dark was going to be, because he was doing a late night presentation at 11:30 later that evening, last night. And so, yeah, he had done something in one in front of the curtain while they were getting things ready back behind.
And one thing that I thought was very interesting about that, the person when they chose the wavy lines, they didn't call it wavy lines, they called it bacon. And I've always thought it looked like bacon, and I'm glad to hear other people.
Yeah, I've been using bacon too.
Okay. Let's see. Michael Amar and Francis Willard was next, and they did the Gypsy Rope Tie, and Francis was as beautiful as ever and as elegant as ever, and it was very, very good. And followed by Lucy Darling. So
I thought it was funny. It was Lucy's line about how, what was that about? You know, this proves here this evening that magicians come in all types, and anybody can do magic. You know, if you are a white man and also,
yes.
Because they were just all white men except for Francis, you know, doing the Gypsy Rope Tie.
That's right. So, yeah, it was, she got that little point in, I thought. But,
but she was wonderful, beautiful, and really brought, and matter of fact, got the standing ovation for the evening.
Yes, see, she did. That's the second standing ovation that I know of at the TOM, and
she got both of them.
She got both of them. Yes, Lucy was involved in both of them. So,
great show.
Once again, if you're a convention planner, hire her.
Yeah, that's all we can say. Yes, although she may be at some point untouchable, in which she's going to be so busy doing other things, she may not be able to do magic conventions in the future.
I really think that's very, very true. I think this is going to be a situation where we're going to be talking in 5 years about, yeah, you remember when Carissa Hendricks and Lucy Darling was available for magic conventions?
Yeah, when you're seeing her on TV or on, you know, Broadway or whatever, it's like, I remember when.
Yes.
I know her.
Yes.
Dal, thank you very much. Always great.
Good to see you.
We will catch up tomorrow morning and kind of recap again tonight's show.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. So there you go. That was for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Dal Sanders. Scotty out. So we were just talking with Dal Sanders about the evening show, and I thought we would talk then with Daryl Howard about the Paul Prater show, which was the Texas After Dark, in which Paul did some bizarre things. It was hosted by Saul Ravencraft. So, Daryl, what was your take? What went on with Paul last night?
I really enjoy Paul. He's one of my favorite mentalists, and he really put on a good show. It was very interesting and entertaining. I saw some stuff, some mentalism that I don't think I've ever seen before. So for a late night show, it really kept me awake and kept me interested and entertained. So, you know, Paul, overall, I think Paul did an excellent job.
Yeah. I missed the show because I was working on this podcast and putting it together so that people were able to see it. And I regret that because Paul is such a good friend. I do like his mentalism, and he does a very good job. My question was wondering, and you can help me with this, whether his personality and the show worked in that venue, because it was a larger stage area, and the kind of seance types of things and bizarre things he does, I would think would play better for a smaller group and more intimate rather than being on the larger stage. How did that work, and how large of a group was in the audience?
It was a small group because it was a late night show.
Yeah.
And so normally the attendance is a little lower.
Yeah.
But I didn't see a problem.
Okay.
Paul's forte is he's very engaging, and he was able to get volunteers on the stage with him, and he works with volunteers on the stage very well, and he makes everybody, whether you're on the stage with him or out in the audience, he makes everybody feel welcome and part of the show.
Could everybody see also? Because the stage is higher, and so it wasn't like there were things on the table you couldn't see?
No, absolutely. There was no problem.
Okay.
There was no problem at all seeing. Yes, it's true when you have a table up on stage, you can't see the tabletop, but he overcame that very well. And I really appreciate the kind, gentlemanly way that he treats his guests on stage. That's a big issue for me.
Yeah.
And he made everybody feel welcome. A lot of times mentalists can be a bit intimidating when you're volunteering to help them.
Yeah.
Paul was not like that. He really made everybody feel welcome and part of the show. And what I really appreciated about it, he ended on a positive note.
Mm-hmm. Meaning what?
Well, his closing comments were, they were summoning spirits. That is the very last thing to summoning spirits of the deceased to give a sign that they were present. And at the very end, he said, "I think the spirits are telling us that they want us to go in peace." And that we are extending the same courtesy to them. And that's how he closed the show. It was a very positive remark, and I appreciated that about him.
Well, now, when you were talking about, again, enjoying mentalism, of course, this is a different field of mentalism, specifically bizarre type of magic, in which that it's almost like an occult type of darker theme, as opposed to mentalist being mind-reading kinds of things, right? Because, you're talking about seances, spirits, and everything. That's not the typical mentalism we know.
Well, he performed a little bit of everything.
Okay.
He did some mind-reading and prediction, and then the summoning of spirits, all the different avenues that you can pursue with mentalism and bizarre-type magic. But he did it very well. He is a real expert at what he does, and I really appreciate Paul's. I've seen him perform before, and I've hung out with him, after the show, and he's not only a very gifted, talented performer, but he's just a great guy to be around.
Oh, he is. Yeah.
He really is.
I've spent a lot of time with him as well, so I can attest to that as well. I like the phrase, Errol, that you used as well, in saying he was welcoming his guests rather than he's welcoming his volunteers, because I have seen him perform, and the way he does handle people, it's kind of like we're talking right now, and you're friends, he's a guest. It's like, welcome to my stage, my area, you are my guest. It's not like, thanks for coming up and volunteering. He has a different kind of dynamic with the people who he interacts with.
He does, and you feel like you're part of the show, which you are.
Yeah,
I think when someone volunteers to help a magician or mentalist on stage, they should feel like part of the show.
Sure.
And
rather
I see
than
that
feeling intimidated, as you are.
Exactly, because I see, I won't mention any names, but I see a lot of magicians that take unfair advantage of their guest. They even say, "Well, who's going to be our next victim?" Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, our next guest on stage, and I don't like that sort of dynamic. To me, it's very negative and unhealthy. And one of the reasons that a lot of people say that they don't like magic or magicians, and I think that needs to change. And Paul, I think, set a very good example for all of us.
Well, moreover, one of my pet peeves is whenever a magician will ask for a volunteer and then wait for them to get on stage, and after they're finished, they just kind of dismiss them and say, "Good luck, get back to your seat." I always respect magicians whenever they will help a person on and off the stage, up and down the steps, make sure they're okay. They don't walk them back to their seat, but at least help them get on and off the stage. It's a very polite thing to do.
Yes, and that everybody that attended that show, if I'm speaking for everybody in the audience, had a good feeling about it, and they were happy that they attended the show. To me, that's the ultimate goal of any professional entertainer, is to make you feel like you were welcome there, and you had a positive experience, and you would do it again. That's the important thing.
Daryl, thanks very much. That was great feedback on that.
Oh, yes. I enjoyed visiting with you.
It's my pleasure. Thanks again. So, that was Daryl Howard, and for the Magic Word Podcast, Scotty out. We've just completed the close-up contest, which also overlapped with the Bizarro lecture, and someone who is working with Bizarro on the late-night show on the opening gala on Friday, and then was featured as the closing. You need a Sharpie over there? I think we can find one. Okay.
I got
Ray Anderson coming over here then, too. But I want to introduce...
Fine. You're a delight on any podcast.
Carissa Hendricks, right here, and also a.k.a. as Lucy Darling, my good friend. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, of course. Absolutely.
It's good to see you. And I just heard some good news that you're going to be represented by William Morris Agency. Is that right?
Yeah, that's already happened. It's really exciting.
So tell me about post-pandemic. I mean, I know what you've been doing, and everybody's been seeing you on Zoom, which is you've just killed it. I think you emerged the queen of everything, you know.
Oh, thank you. So it's weird to be the queen of Zoom. It's like being the queen of trash. That's... Not the best compliment. Thank you.
But it was intended to be.
Okay.
A compliment.
No, it was good. It was, I think everybody felt like we were all just waiting for something to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was just biding my time. I didn't expect the Zoom show to do well. But what it did allow is people from all over the world could see it, including agents and producers and TV mm-hmm. people and managers. And some of those people dug what I do. And now I've got an agent and a manager. And
were you surprised when that all came together?
I was very surprised. Yeah. I was properly in shock. I'm still in shock. It's shocking.
Yeah.
And the coolest thing is, like, you get on with William Morris, and I didn't really know what that meant. And then they, like, do your one sheet, and they, like, build all your promo, and you realize, oh, I've been doing it wrong for years. I don't know anything about anything. Yeah. Because, it's just so nice to be able to – it just feels like I've been pushing a ball up a hill for my whole life, and all of a sudden somebody else is like, do you want me to push the ball forever? Like, yeah, that'd be great. I mean, so now I can just sort of do stupid shows with Biz and hang out.
Well, that just kind of leads me to a point of being a goal. As far as, have you had something in mind? This is what you wanted to do, or is it just kind of, I mean,
no.
You just been bouncing along? I mean, it's, things have always unlocked well for me and you. When I had talked with you first, and I broadcast this in March of 2018, shortly after you had won the Melbourne Comedy Festival, and Tim Ellis said, you got to talk to this young lady, and we did. We've been good friends since. And so anyhow, it really is exciting how well you've been doing. And I was telling Dal Sanders this morning when we were chatting, saying I really believe that you in the future, not too long from now, we're gonna be saying, right, so remember when she used to work magic conventions, you know, because
pry magic conventions from my cold dead fingers.
Well, it could be you won't have enough time for that William Morris may be keeping you busy and everything.
See.
So you'll be on Broadway before long and working the world and Sydney Opera House
it's
and traveling with
tell.
The Illusionist no, and all that.
Nobody knows what's gonna happen. Oh, you know, if you learned anything from the pandemic, it's that everything is up in the air. Mm-hmm. Nothing is certain. Just, like, be happy in the moment. Like, I'm really excited to be here right now, and that's it. And everything in the future is pretend.
Like, okay. Well, but do you have goals? In other words, is there something that the Morris Agency is talking to you about, saying, well, we have this planned, or are they saying, what do you want to do, or they want you to do something?
What the gift of having an agent and a manager has been is I can just be honest about the fact that I don't really have any idea what I want. Like, the biggest goal I had in life when I started doing magic was to perform at the Magic Castle. Mm-hmm. That was, like, the end goal. That was the point.
Yeah.
And then that happened 4 years ago. And so I've just been doing stuff. Like I'm not, people think I'm ambitious, but I'm not. I like doing the show. I like writing the show, and I like designing magic, and I like lecturing, and I like doing the work. The awards and the accolades and that stuff, that's all gravy. I don't, you know, that's not the goal. It's never been the goal. So when I, you know, got with this wonderful agency and I got really lucky, and I was hanging out with my manager, and the one question that keeps coming up is, they're like, what do you want? And I just keep going, I just want to do the thing. I just want to work. I just want to do my show and perform for people and make art, and whatever vehicle gives me permission to do that in the most consistent way, that's what I want. So I think my agent at William Morris Clinton, he's amazing, and he's a genius, and he is so down to earth and so cool, and it's so nice just to be able to be honest with him and go, look, I don't have any big goals. I just want to work. And he was like, cool, I have plans for you. And so they come up with stuff, and I just do it. And cool. It's such a gift because, you know, most people, I think, are, you know, being their own manager, being their own agent, and you don't kind of realize how hard that is on you to, you know, be your own big picture person and kind of make all your own plans and figure out what your next steps are. And it's so nice to have people, like, so nice to have a team whose job it is to go, hey, Krissa, maybe do this other thing. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Hey, your show could use this. Oh, it totally could. Thanks.
You know? Having someone else who's looking at it from another subjective point of view. You know,
yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And we'll just have people in your corner who, like, are getting paid to make you, you know, their financial success is tied to your financial success. So it's easier to accept their criticism and accept their support.
One of the things I remember discussing with you so many years ago was when you were talking about how that you had divided certain parts of your time and your day in which you're going to say, okay, I'm going to devote a couple of hours to writing. I'm going to devote a couple of hours then to juggling, a couple of hours over here then to my art of drawing or to whatever. I mean, so you've always seemed to be a very organized person, even at a young age. A lot of people are just kind of whatever happens, happens. But you have said, okay, I'm going to set out time for these things to happen. And you develop all these skills. And the more you practice, the better you become, obviously. So you still kind of divide your day up?
Yes and no. So the thing that happened during the pandemic was I recognized that I have more skills that I have to maintain than I have time. You know, because when all you're doing is you're sitting around, you kind of recognize how much time you're spending maintaining skills that you don't really use. So I did a lot of editing during quarantine. So I've decided, like, there's, you know, I've retired a few of my shows, I've retired a few of my characters because it was too hard to maintain them, and it's sad. It was really sad to retire those things. So now it's more, now
you haven't killed them off, you just retired them.
Yeah, they're not dead. I mean, but most of what was in my act, everything I do requires everything I do is knacky. I like knacky stuff. And they're all skills that need to be maintained, and I can't keep 30 knives sharpened. So I had to put some away, put some in the storage unit, backed away, and it was really hard. But now I have so much more space in my brain to be creative, but I also have suddenly space to be a friend and to hang out with people. Because I think during the pandemic, I spent so much of my time just, like, working on this online show and trying to maintain my skills. And then as the pandemic was kind of wrapping up, I went, you know, I don't love this about me. I don't love that I'm, like, still trying to be a good illustrator, and I'm still trying to, like, be a good all these other things. Yeah. I can't maintain all these skills, and so I'm just going to focus on being real good at doing Lucy Darling and making new magic.
Well, that's another question, is how was it that Lucy Darling was the one that bubbled up to the top? I mean, with the other great characters you had, I mean, what was it about her personality that you decided this is the one I'm going to carry?
Man, if I knew, I could
she just spoke to you.
I could bottle it and then hand it to other people. I have absolutely no idea. I mean, I think there's a certain element of random chance in success, and there's that. But I think also, I've always really tried to, you know, if anyone's seen my Meta Modernity at lecture, I always try to make art that is relevant to the time. It's kind of about where we're standing now. And when I was creating Lucy, I wanted her to be really relevant, and I wanted to play with the ideas of femininity and power and femininity and childhood and adulthood and all these things that were kind of coming up in culture. And I think that I just accidentally hit on this recipe that for people, things that people wanted. And, you know, she's an aspirational being. But also I think there's this thing of, like, we're going into PC culture and people feel like you can't say anything, and, oh, everybody's so easily offended, and here's this woman who can say anything she wants. And I think in a way it's sort of this throwback to an era where you could say anything you want. And the way people are like, how come you get away with saying anything you want? I'm like, because I have done my research, and I know what is genuinely offensive, and I think the audience trusts that I would never go there. And so I can say whatever I want because I don't want to say things that are...
You know the boundaries.
I know the boundaries. I know what would offend people. I'm not going to make those jokes. I'm going to mostly make jokes about people's choices or about the situation.
Have you seen that evolve also? I mean, even recently, since quarantine, let's say the last 18, 20 months or so, have you seen some of those boundaries changing and moving?
Oh, for sure. I used to feel like Lucy would say riskier jokes than I would be willing to make. And now I think it's the opposite. I think, like, I write stuff for her that is really risky, and then you know, and then when I kind of hand it to her, Lucy's like, I don't want to say that. Like, even last night during the gala, because I was closing, I wanted to, like, do jokes about the whole show because I wanted to tie things together. And so I wrote a joke about every act, but I had to recognize, you know, some of these people I've just met for the first time, and maybe I don't know, you know, how they are. I don't know if they don't have a comedy background, maybe they don't know that, like, a roast is actually an act of kindness. And so I pretty much just picked on Brian Brushwood, because Brian and I are friends. So I know that he's going to see that as the act of love it really is. But then it was so sad because I wrote all these other great jokes about the other performers, and I was like crossing them out, like, no, can't do it.
Well, that's interesting. And one other thing too is about the improvisational things, as far as recommendations to others who are going to go out and want to create their own character in the future as well. I suspect you recommend people going and taking some improvisational classes.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you want to do with your act, absolutely. I think not everybody has to do an improvisational act. Yeah. I think it's some basic skills are good to have. But the thing about improv, whether you're going to take classes or not, or whether it's going to be the core of what you do, is that it really stems from this idea of just fully being present in the moment, you know.
Good point.
I think a lot of us, we get into doing a piece of material and we're thinking about the trick, or we're thinking about the script, and we're not thinking about the genuine interaction we're having with the audience. And you need to know, you know, you need to know the moves so well, you're not thinking about them. And you need to know the script so well, you're not even thinking about it. So that your whole brain can be focused on watching people and listening to that audience and being in the room you're in. And you know, I try to write at least 3 or 4 jokes for every event that I'm only going to do in this room. Like, even the show last night, there's tons of jokes that were just about the show. And I think it reminds people, like, oh, this is present, this is here, you know, this is a unique experience that we're celebrating together. You're not just watching me do a rehearsal of the stuff I do 1,000 times. I made something for you. This is for you.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's important that you do have a scripted show and yet still be present, so you're just not reading the script, because then it'd be comes, you know, something that they could watch on TV, and we may not even need to be here because she or he is not recognizing that I am here on the stage with them, because you're just kind of mentally going through the script. But if you stop and you say something about their name, and because you're recognizing, oh, and then you say something funny about their name or their location or something, again, you know, having some improvisational skills,
or they're looking like a gnome,
or no, that was funny. Or the guy did look like a gnome.
He looked like a gnome. He's wearing a green shirt and everything. I was like, you know what you look like.
Had the beard.
Like. You dressed yourself today. I can make this joke.
And you were on the stage, and he was down on the floor, so he kind of was short, like he was in the garden, like he was a gnome. You know,
he's a little garden gnome boy. He's so cute.
He was. You have also been inspirational, not just to young women who want to become magicians, but magicians in general, with just what you have done and given to the community. Certainly. One question I know that is people may be asking, and that is, when are you going to be getting back together with Kayla for Shazam for the next episode, or next season, or will there be, or what's the future?
During the pandemic, it became really clear that, like I was saying, I had to do some editing. Mm-hmm. And as much as I loved doing Shazam, it became really obvious that, like, Kayla didn't need me anymore. You know, it was always her idea, it was always her baby, and I was kind of just helping. And so that belongs to her now. That's, you know, she is doing a fabulous job. She does not need me. And I think, like, it was much more, she's a very strong person. And I think that kind of work, about talking about that kind of, you know, disparity, power disparity, was so hard on me. And so I think it makes sense that she takes it over and she runs it. So I don't think I'll be going back to Shazam, because in my big mass edit, some things had to go. And, you know, I was there for 2 years. We did beautiful things together. Yeah. We got to do the Tommy Wonder Project for Penguin. We did the Great Peller Show. But I think that chapter is kind of done for me. And I, you know, I mean, listen to the podcast. It's fabulous. Do it. But I just, I don't think people realize, like, you do, Scott, obviously you realize how much work a podcast is.
Yeah.
And how much, like, trying to do a weekly thing and this burden that hangs over your head of, like, constantly trying to do this thing and then also touring. And it was just, she's so much better at maintaining a schedule than I am. So, unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to go back. It was just too hard. But I gave it 2 good years.
Oh, you really did. And particularly with the things that you have planned in the future, this is something that would be not, I wouldn't call it a drain on your time, but it was certainly is something that takes a lot of time, even if there is someone who's driving a truck. I mean, as a passenger, I mean, you're riding shotgun. If she's driving, you still have to kind of be along for the ride and do some of the preparation for that,
yeah.
Even if there's someone, again, kind of editing and putting the whole thing together and promoting it, but it still takes time of yours, which you're going to be having very little of as your future unfolds here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm basically booked solid until February of next year at this point. I'm touring full-time, and it's great. It's amazing. But the kind of projects that I'm getting onto now, I'm expected to also be a creative on the project, which I love, but then it's not just about showing up and doing a show. It's about, you know, my brain. I've been pulled into a lot of projects where they're all-consuming mental exercises, where you're just constantly thinking about it. And there's only, I'm sure you know, Scott, there's only so many of those projects you can have in your head at the same time.
That's true. Well, that's kind of what Sherlock Holmes has always said. You know, there's so much room in the attic, and if this is not a relevant type of things I need to know, then I'm going to make room for something that's more important. So,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, it was a really hard decision, but it, in a way, it was a really easy decision because Kayla is so competent and amazing. I knew that, you know, it wasn't going to really lose anything if I stepped back. And so, and it hasn't at all. So it was just like, okay.
Let me ask you just one last question having to do with Zoom, since you have been, I said, the queen of Zoom. I meant that in a real...
No, I know. I'm just teasing.
But from the standpoint, what do you see for the future of Zoom as far as magicians go? Do you think there is a place in the future where they can continue to use that? And if so, do we need to step up our game more? Now that we've had so many lessons, we've learned how to build our own studios in the house and a garage or whatever. Do you think there's a future for that to continue?
I mean, again, I think I've learned from the pandemic that there's no certainty in anything. My guess is absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm handing off gigs left and right to other online performers because already there's all of these corporate gigs that we did last year or corporate gigs we couldn't do because we were already booked that are trying to get us for an online show this year, because for lots of companies, they have employees all over the world, and the opportunity for them to have all those employees share in a singular, unique experience was really valuable. And so there is just some stuff that the online shows do that you can't do with in-person shows. Mm-hmm. And so I really think there's always going to be a market for it. I mean, even right now, I'm traveling with two suitcases, and I've got enough gear to do a full Zoom show. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be the show I was doing before because that show had two other performers and a puppet in it.
Yes.
So it'd be a different show. But I mean, I am set up to do online stuff even out of my suitcase now if I had to. Next weekend I'm doing a convention online, and then next weekend I'm doing a convention. I'm doing Magi Fest, so you know it's.
I'll see you at Magi Fest. I'll be there. Yeah,
yeah. I'm going to do my full hour show. So
oh, you are okay.
That'll be fun. It'll be the first time I've done my full hour since before the pandemic. So we'll see how it goes.
I'll see you there.
Everyone, lower your expectations, please.
Sit back down.
Yeah, I think it's going to stay, and I think there are going to be people who focus on it, and there are people like me who try to do both.
You had a manual. I mean, you kind of put together a particular mini lectures about doing this too.
I think it's online somewhere still, like a virtual performance lecture, and it's a lot about like 3-point lighting and you know, how to cut things together, because a lot of people tried to put pre-records in their online stuff, which is great. It can be done, but it means that you now need to become an editor. You now need to become a filmmaker. You need to know how to cut sound together, and it was amazing getting into it and realizing, oh, I have to learn everything about independent filmmaking just to do a half-decent online show.
Right.
But it's great because now I watch movies, I watch television, and I can see so much in it that I couldn't see before because I have a deeper understanding.
Well, I look forward to seeing you again in a couple of weeks, and it's been a lot of fun to catch up here after the past 20 months of not seeing you, except I probably watch more of you online than any other performer. I mean, I saw a lot of other performances and everything that was going on, and for those who have been following me over the last year and attending some of the virtual happy hours that I've had on for Magic and Martini's Thursday night, the reason that we didn't have Carissa was because she was always busy doing Dungeons & Dragons on Thursday nights.
Thursdays are my Dungeons & Dragons night. They need me. I'm a rogue class elf. I mean, what are they going to do without me? I would have loved to have done the show, but yeah. There was one day when we canceled our thing, and I almost like messaged you to go, hey, I'm just going to come in. And then I realized 3 hours notice is probably not enough notice.
Could have done it. We missed you.
I should have done it.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck to you. And for those people who are listening, I recommend that you go back and listen, just to go through the archives and just do a search for Carissa. And I can't remember what number that it was, but it was back in March of 2018, and we spoke for about an hour. And so anyhow, highly recommend that to kind of compare her to then and now. I mean, just within the last 3 years, you have changed and grown so much. much, you know.
It's going well.
Yes, it is going well. I'm so excited and happy for you and for your future. So good luck.
Thank you so much. That's so nice of you to say.
And so with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Carissa Hendricks, Lucy Darling, Scotty out. One of the things we have overlooked on this podcast episode for the convention coverage is kind of a talk with some of the dealers. And we do have a few dealers here, and I thought it's best we talk with someone who has actually been a friend of the TAOM since I can't remember when. You have been coming. I've got with me right now Harry Allen, of course, of Daytona Magic. He's my buddy, and you're Sue. Hey, Harry.
Hey, boys. How you doing there?
So glad that you are here again. How many years have you been coming, do you think?
Well, we're 55 years in business, and I don't know how many to TAOM, but a lot.
Yeah.
I really don't have a clue exactly what, but I can just tell you something. It feels like family here. It really, really does. People know me. I know them. And they're just genuine friends as well as customers.
Well, you go to so many different conventions. I'm sure you feel that way. But you really don't get the sense of the feel of the convention from the outside of the room, except during breakfast and when you're actually eating. And I'm sure that you meet a lot of people and they come over and talk. And this has got to be a little bit different and kind of a nice family feel.
That's exactly what I was going to tell you. I've been at conventions. People are friends of mine from all over other conventions. It's a very, very friendly feel. It really, really is. It feels great to be here. The energy this year, which is past years as well, but especially this year, you can tell people really wanting this.
You think it's because we're just now getting out of COVID and everybody's just like, now we're ready. It's like coming out of a slingshot.
I do. I absolutely do.
I was curious about how that was going to go because it could have gone either way. Kind of like, you know, like a turtle slowly poking your head out. Oh, is it okay or not? Or it's like, heck, I'm ready to go. Boom, you know.
I pack a convention, supposedly how I think it's going to come out.
Sure.
But I always pack on the heavy side. I'd rather have more than not enough. And this crowd was, like I said, just bearing to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, have you got a lot of, since this is kind of real live in-person conventions have started up again, what other conventions have you attended, or is this your first?
First one in a year and a half,
okay.
2 years.
Well, welcome.
Yeah. You know
it. How does it feel after?
I got chills just talking about it. Absolutely.
I'm glad we're the ones.
And me too. I'm telling you right now, I'm trying to be careful. I got the mask. I'm washing my hands constantly.
Yep.
But it's one of those things you want to ease into it. But I had two good lectures here, and it was good. The people were extremely responsive and a lot of fun.
What about other conventions after this before the end of 21? What conventions?
The next one I'm going to be going to is Ken Scott's. It's a short one up there in Atlanta.
I didn't know that. I'm going to be there too, but I didn't know they actually had dealers.
Yeah, Atlanta now. Atlanta.
Ken Scott. I'm sorry. I was thinking Scott Robinson.
No.
There's so many Scotts here.
Yeah,
Scott Wells.
I know. I get you. But no, it's the Ken Scott Atlanta Harvest.
Yeah.
So we'll be up there for that one. That'll be my next one. Pretty much that'll be it for the end of the year. And who knows after that? I mean, I'm booked for Magic Live and a couple other ones. But you know how the world goes. Things change on a dime.
That's right. Just as we thought this was going to be over, we were anxious to get back and they had the Delta variant or, you know, different. You don't know what's going to happen.
Nope, you don't. And that's that edge where you got to stay in business, but you got to, you know, save your life.
And so how have things been going then for you? I mean, you were on my virtual happy hour. You joined us.
We had a great time doing that. We really did.
And for those who missed that, you can go back and watch those. Those are on YouTube and also on the Facebook page. But when we were doing our virtual happy hour, but it was a lot of fun. So, and we did talk a little bit about this, but just kind of briefly, how has it been during the past year? Have you been kind of working on looking for new tricks, building new tricks, or refining your online presence, or what have you been doing?
We've pretty much been doing everything we've always been doing, except it's not having the conventions. New items coming in, Facebook Live every day. Just continuing, pushing, moving hard and everything.
But a big question I have, though, has to do with just brick-and-mortar magic shops, in which there have been fewer and fewer of them as they've gone out of business. And I would think during this pandemic, it has been particularly difficult on magic shops who might have been struggling to begin with. What were you doing in order to keep in business during that difficult time when there weren't tourists coming into Daytona Beach?
Right. Well, our door... we've been open since May where people could just walk in with a mask. But before May, for the whole year, during the beginning, people would knock on the door with a mask. We'd come in and buy something, they leave. But we've just been doing a lot of mail order, and we've been doing some walk-in. Of course, no convention during that time.
Yeah.
So that's it, just pounding hard. People were home more during the pandemic, so the mail order has picked up tremendously. Plus, remember, we've got a 55-year relationship with magicians around the world.
Right.
call us on the phone, we answer the phone. We give service. You're not getting a recording. Will we get back to you or whatever?
Well, that is a key thing in which you're going to be having actually a service. And that's the one thing I would implore everyone to go and help build a brick-and-mortar magic shop. So they're the ones that we need to keep in business. And when you go there, you have dealers like Harry who are going to say, you know, what are your interests? Let me show you now something that will fit your interests. If your interest is this or that or whatever, they can recommend something to you rather than having to go through hundreds of hours of videos on YouTube.
My nickname is the Postman because we deliver. Now, listen, I say that seriously because when people ask me, can you get this? Can you do this? Is this any good? This and that. We shoot straight with them to get repeat business.
Yeah. Well, so glad that you're here for this convention. Glad you're having a good time. Glad you're doing well then and too, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in the future, too.
It's always great seeing you. You're a class act.
Thank you, Harry, for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Harry Atlin with Daytona Magic. Scotty out. We just finished the lecture with Lucy Darling, actually Carissa Hendricks, talking about building a character like Lucy Darling, and we just also talked with Carissa, so you got to hear a little bit about her and her philosophy and what she's doing, but also we also discussed how she had worked on Friday night with another gentleman in tandem, and that was Bizarro, who is here with us now. Bizarro, hello.
Hello. How are you?
I am just doing fine. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Moose and squirrel. Sorry.
So you're bizarre. You're bizarre, man.
Sometimes. Just depends. I've had no sleep because it's a magic convention on Sunday.
Which is why I wanted to get with you also. This is like whole home week for you because you have been in Vegas now for about 15 years, yeah. Originally from Dallas. Mm-hmm. And so having come back here, what's it like? To the conventions
Often. I mean, other than hating all the humidity that I'm glad I left behind, it's nice. I mean, everybody here, It's funny how many people come up to me and go, I've known you since you were this high, since you were a young guy. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And you still talk to me, so that means, I guess that's something good happened, I guess. But yeah, no, it's weird to see all the people who I've known forever, like some of the younger kids who, like, we all met when they were, you know, teenagers, and I was a little older than them, and now we're all... Now we can all buy liquor legally. It's weird.
Not quite the same, is it?
No.
Didn't have the edge.
I'm glad to see some of the people who stuck with it. You know, there's a handful of people who you're always going to fall away, but there's a handful of people who stay in the life.
Well, I eventually want to sit down and we'll have a right proper episode in the chat and talk about all of this because I do want to talk about the character development and things that you have done. In fact, Al Sanders and I were just talking earlier about how that you had a vision, a goal, a dream, and some people give up on those dreams, and you never did. And yours may have seemed like a nightmare, but it became a reality.
Only a nightmare to other people, really. It was fine for me. No, my parents were very supportive of my weirdness. Most of it's their fault, I would say. There was definitely early on in the younger, you know. I'm sure, as you know, the South is not terribly progressive. So when you decide to be a weirdo, people are like, well, maybe you shouldn't be doing that. And then you stick with it. And then now all of a sudden those same people are like, oh, we always believed in you. I'm like, really? When was that? Don't worry about it. But it's interesting to see how things change the more notoriety you get.
Yes. It's suddenly like, hey, yeah, we're best friends. Yeah. Remember when we did this? Not really, but okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like Carissa was staying at my house when she started writing the Lucy Darling character. So I got to watch it happen from very early on and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see her be like, I want to try this. And according to her, she's like there were three people. I was one of them who said, do it. Everybody else was like, that's dumb. And of course, you know, I'm a big fan of if somebody comes to me with an idea, they say, what do you think of this? My advice usually is do it. Find out. Mm-hmm. Don't ask anybody's opinion. Just try it. Yeah. You'll know if it's dumb or not. And if you think, and I say this all the time, if you think stupid things don't catch on, then you've never been on the internet.
That's true. I do like one of the things, many things she said during her lecture.
Her lecture is very smart because she's coming from a place of vast experience.
And truth. That's true, right.
Yeah.
But one of the things that she was leaving everyone with is to say, I want you to step out of your comfort zone and promise me you will try a character once. If it works, fine. If it doesn't, fine. But try it at least once.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's stuff I've done. Like I prefer being myself, but I have done character work, and I have no problem jumping into it. If somebody says, hey, can you be this or do this? I'm like, yeah, let's go.
People think you are a character.
I know, and it's my. And then they realize, oh, this is his personality. Dear God,
killing me. So going back to when you guys worked together, this was the first time you'd actually worked
officially. Officially. We've collaborated on Zoom, like material. Well, that, but I've also helped her build stuff. We've got done like the book thing she done on Penn and Teller. She came to me and said, "Hey, I need to switch this," and I was like, "I have this idea," and I'm like, "Okay, let's do this instead." So I built the switching mechanism for that. And her and I have just always collaborated on like props, but not a show together, right? So what happened was they said, "Hey, come do your hour show," and I said, "Ooh, I got a really good 45 minutes. I have an okay hour. Let's bring in an opening act to kind of." And then when I suggested her, and then as things got closer over time, I'm like, I feel calling her an opening act is an insult. Because at this point, she's more popular than I am.
More of a tandem act.
Yes. But then I was like, okay, let's make it a show. Because I like working with other people because you can create stuff you wouldn't normally do. You can open up new doors to ideas. And also, it just gives you somebody to bounce stuff off of.
I've seen you work with Shocker, for example, when you're working at the Jeff McBride's Wonderground.
Yeah, for sure. And that's working with Shocker's great because there's material with him that I only do with him. And it's like the thing her and I did together is a combination of two things we do separately. We just found a way to marry the two together to have it make
air quotes cookies
sense.
And the drink.
Yeah, exactly. But
air
I did
quote sex.
Sense. Oh. Calm down, Jesus. Okay, I know it's been a long pandemic, but all right. But I brought a prop in that I don't use because I have an Oreo cookie bit in my talking act, but it's the one I did here is different, and I brought a prop that I don't use in that, the refilling package, the one that just...
It's very clever.
Yeah, I don't do that normally, but now it exists in this routine.
It's great on Zoom and on your YouTube.
Well, I tell people all the time, I saw people who, when I did that, they were like, "Oh, that's a camera trick." I said, "Oh, no, I can do it live." And they're like, "What?" Because now there's so much magic on the internet that is faked and cheated and stuff. And something I'm starting to learn, the more BS that the internet does to magic, the better live performers look now. Because there's so much all these fake filters that let you do magic on TikTok, but not really, and all this stuff. And all these guys like Zach King doing all this crazy editing to look like magic. I'm like, you know what? Keep being fake, because when they come see me, they're going to love what I do. Because they are sitting going, "Well, I'm not in front of a computer screen. I can't explain it." Because on video, they can explain it away. You can't explain it away when you're in person.
Oh,
so,
very good point.
Take that, social media magicians.
And there have been a lot of them. Well, I remember when I had you on my virtual happy hour or Magic Martini Thursday night, the video I showed beforehand was part of the montage, included that little thing that you had done with the Oreos as well.
Yeah.
A lot of really clever ideas and things that you've got all the time. Did you feel that you were more or less creative when you were forced at home and under pandemic and not doing anything?
So the pandemic, the first 3 months I got to work on private project or personal projects for myself that I'd been needing time to work on. I actually, before the pandemic happened, I said, "Oh, I need like 3 months to myself to just work on my own ideas." And then the universe said, "All right, nuclear option, here you go." And I went, "That's a little extreme, universe. That's not what I meant, but thanks." So I spent 3 months working on personal stuff, and then people started wanting things again because of a prop builder and an escape room maker. People want stuff that...
I forgot, that's right. You were really doing a lot of escape room things.
Yeah. We're building
consulting.
Two right now. That's why I got to go back. That's why I got to leave tomorrow and go back to Vegas to start working on that. So, it's a lot of... I didn't have a lot of time for myself just because I was busy being... As I have come to find that my new business is making other people look good. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do now. And so I just built stuff for people all the time. I did a few things for Carbonaro. I did a few things for... I think I built something for her. People just want stuff. And I'm the guy who knows how to make weird crap.
You know, I hear that frequently. I mean, I hear your name frequently whenever someone's saying, "Well, I got a problem and I need the solution, and I'm going to call Bizarro."
Right. Yeah, it's a weird niche that I didn't know needed filled, but apparently it did.
Yes, and I'm sure you're keeping busy just helping other people like that and consulting.
Trying to. Yeah, I mean, I did two TV shows over the pandemic, consulting and building and stuff. It was crazy. Yeah, I mean, all the protocols in place were a nightmare because you had to get tested every 2 to 3 days, and there were TV shows that were worse than a week.
Are you talking about like network shows? Or
I consulted and built stuff for Brett Loudermilk on America's Got Talent. And then another magician, we filmed a pilot for the thing they're trying to sell. So that's probably, that may or may not ever be seen by the public. Okay. But we did this
Can't talk about that yet.
No, not yet. Not unless it airs or it happens. So I really, yeah. But I did, we did a whole like hour long special, 45 minute special, I guess, because we thought it might air, but we don't know. So that was a lot of time spent in LA. That was like a 3 or 4 week gig, you know, consulting, building, being on set, having to make sure stuff worked. there's a lot of times when you're standing off behind camera with a remote holding, hoping the electronics thing will work. It's like, come on! Or hiding under tables. That's one of my fun jobs, hiding under a table, pulling a string. And, you know, it's like, consulting is basically problem solving when you're doing TV. It's like, oh, this didn't show up. Oh, this didn't get built. Oh, crap, we need to make it happen or it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
At one point, the magic team became the art department, and it was like, oh, my God, give me their paycheck because I'm doing their work too.
All right. Exactly. Well, listen, we are going to get together sometime soon,
yeah.
And we'll sit down for it, because you can tell, ladies and gentlemen who are listening to this, there's a lot more behind this gentleman, and we do need to spend
Jesus, sorry, I thought you meant literally behind me. Jesus, that scared me.
Spends a lot more time over here, and in fact, I'm going to be coming to Vegas later in September.
Okay.
I'm going to be going to Murray's wedding. It's going to be in the September.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't think I'll be at that, but hit me up and let me know.
I'll give you a call, maybe we can sit down and have a chat. Until then, appreciate the opportunity we have in right now. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Bizarro. Scotty out. Well, one of the performers we have this year at the TOM is someone who we haven't seen before, and you just tell me we haven't seen him for a reason. And that's Magical Mystical Michael. Tell me, is that right, or is it Mystical Magic?
No, it's M-A before M-Y.
Okay, Magical Mystical.
A lot of people say Mystical. It's Magical Mystical.
Michael.
And it's interesting, because when I was younger and I made a card, I handwritten it, and it was really bare around the edges. So I figured I put Magical on one edge, really skinny and thin, and Mystical on the other edge. So it would give me a little adjectives. Gotcha. And people would read the card, and they kept going, oh, Magical Mystical Michael. And I go, just Michael the Magician. Then everybody, so finally, just, I guess, Magical Mystical Michael.
The 3M Magician.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah. And so, were you doing street magic and everything then, or what type of magic would you specialize in?
I started in Boulder, Colorado in the mid-70s. Yeah, I was working at the college.
You're a real hippie.
Yeah, I was working at the college as a busboy, and I saw a magician in the lunchroom doing magic. And I didn't pay much attention. I was too sympathetic. I would get nervous that they would screw up.
Yeah.
Then he did a color-changing handkerchief trick, and I was on the side of the stage, and he walked over to the side to get somebody, shoved something in his pocket. And I said, what could he have shoved in his pocket? And there was a magic shop in Boulder called The Wizard.
Yeah.
Back then, Sam Kent ran it. And a few.
That wasn't Zizo. Zizo's
no,
magic.
It was, okay. And Eddie Goldstein, Steve Aldridge.
Steve Aldridge is a good buddy of mine.
Yeah.
Kathy,
she's a piano player.
Yep.
They got married.
Yes, correct.
Right, and they know me.
Yeah. From France. Kathy DeFrance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
they had the Phone Family Circus.
Yes.
Well, you weren't part of that, were you?
No.
Oh, man, you almost just really got me there.
Well, I almost was, but I was doing a lot of Renaissance fairs, so I wasn't in town a lot.
Yeah.
I was in and out, and they needed, you know, and I know Brent Warren, he's part of it too. So, but anyway, I went into the Wizard and I told him about the color changing handkerchiefs, and he says, do you want one sleight of hand or you want the automatic one? And he said sleight of hand. He says, you don't know what sleight of hand is. I said, no, I never. He showed it to me. I go, that's the one.
Yeah.
It was like $3.
Yeah.
So I took it. I went under the 17th Street Bridge, and I opened it up. It was little teeny Japanese words and little teeny pictures. I couldn't figure it out at all.
Yeah.
So the next day I went back, and that's when Steve Aldridge was there.
Yeah.
And I showed him what I had. He brought me to the back room, and he showed me how to do it. I go, oh, that's so easy.
Yeah, well, of course.
And that... Then I got stuck, and I would do show it to someone, and that still is my opening in every show I do now, is the color-changing handkerchiefs.
Well, that is a good one, of course, you know, to try to draw a crowd and everything then, too.
No, it's good. And Jerry Andrus, I knew him from doing Oregon. He loved the way...
Did you live in Oregon?
I did a lot of work in Oregon.
Okay, yeah.
And
did you ever go in his backyard and see that?
Yeah, I went to his house.
Wow.
He took me to magic lectures in the Oregon area to show off how I do the color-changing handkerchiefs, how I do the steel. Yeah. And he loved it.
His house was known as something. He had
it was like a museum.
It was. I never went there, but I've heard about
great.
That. The House of Wonder or something.
It was almost like going into the Magic Castle when all those cool things, the walls open. you know, Jerry was a really interesting guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Anyways.
So no, I liked him a lot. We were buds.
Was he kind of a mentor to you? Did he teach you some stuff, or you just were friends?
He taught me a few things. I learned a lot of coin work with him. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he did one thing once where. Is this just for magicians? Or is it, okay, because he showed one. He had a silver dollar in his hand, and he just hit his hands together and held it like this, and it was gone. And everybody went, "Whoa!" He just taped it to his hand, and that's only it was taped to his hand with double-sided tape, and he just went like that, and he showed like that. Yeah. And with Jerry, if you knew him, he didn't do stuff like that. Yeah. He killed everybody with just that move.
That is funny.
No.
So you were in Boulder, and then you also were was doing a lot of magic, I guess, like then for the students, or
no? I did the mall. I just did street shows on the mall.
And then you realize, hey, there's some money in there.
And then I bought an old step van, a 1952 International step van. It's like an old UPS truck.
Yeah.
And I started touring around the country. So I went, and I did colleges. So I would go to the college at noon and just bring my table and my magic, set up, and start doing street shows while people were going for lunch. I would do two or three shows until I got kicked off. Then I'd go somewhere else, and when I would hit the West Coast and I went down the coast, I ran into California, and then there was a Renaissance Fair in California.
Okay.
And so I decided, let me try it out. And that's where I got in on it. Then I met a group called the Flying Karamazov Brothers.
Wow.
And then up north, I went up north again to Oregon. I did the Oregon Country Fair, which was an old hippie fair. And I met them there again. Yeah. Then I met Tom Noddy, the bubble guy. Yeah. And I met my good friend Avner the Eccentric.
Wow.
And so we're still good buddies, all of them. And
you ever meet Dead Bob?
Yeah, Dead Bob. Dead Bob does the Renaissance Circuit. He just passed away.
I heard that.
Yeah. And interesting, because when he went into the hospital to have some heart thing done, he was on Facebook, and he's a Facebook friend, and he says, "You guys, quit texting me or talking to me now, because I need some time off. I'll be back in about a week." That was the end we seen him. So it was pretty interesting. He passed just like that.
Yeah.
You know, and he was a good guy. Dude.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Very funny guy. Very funny guy. I only saw him at the Renaissance Festival. I didn't know what else that he
Clark.
Did, you know.
He was a good guy. Clark Orwick.
So you did a lot of the Renaissance festivals and everything. Did you ever meet Cellini when you were out to travel?
Oh, Cellini used to work the mall with Johnny Fox.
I was about to say, I knew Johnny did a lot of Renaissance and did the
so
sword swallowing.
They worked the malls together. And one day, a Colorado Festival opened up, and I told Johnny and Cellini about the Colorado Fair. So they all came. Cellini didn't stay much. He traveled again, but Johnny got involved in the Colorado Fairs. And I haven't seen...
So Bob Sheets.
Right. I knew Bob Sheets used to come to Boulder and do the mall, too.
Yeah.
And I know Bob Sheets because he lives in Maryland, and he had that restaurant he did for a while.
The Brookhaven Inn of Magic or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And
Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Yes. And then years have passed, and a friend of mine says, "Michael, I have to go up to Oklahoma, and I'm a jeweler, but I need someone to help me try on ear cuffs for the women." And I had a week off, so I said, "I'll go up and do it with you." And there was an old magician there performing. And I look, and he was an old guy, and I'm looking at him, and I'm saying, "This guy's good." And it was Cellini. It was about 20 years later. And it was the last time I seen him. And then he, about 5 years later, he passed away.
Yeah. So. Yeah, what a guy. And so I would think there would be a lot of street performers you kind of have come in and out with, because there was a book that his...
Passing the Hat. It was a book that's out by Patricia Campbell.
I'm thinking of Elaine, or not Elaine. I had a podcast episode with her, and she had recently written a book about Cellini, traveling with him, and having a child, and he didn't want to have a family, and so they kind of split. But anyhow, just talking about their early days and traveling and how he had developed his show and everything. Good. So anyhow, so how did you end up here? Now, I was about to say, when I introduced you to begin with, I said, you haven't been here before, and it's an interesting story
I've been at a few conventions, but I never performed at one.
Okay, so this is your first...
Yeah, well, I live in Austin, and Austin's putting this on.
Yeah.
And so I made a phone call to Peter, and I says, "Peter, what do you think? I'd like to perform." And then Bertil called me up, and all of a sudden, they know me for years, so here I am.
Yeah.
So it was not hard.
But you've never performed at a magic convention?
No, I've been to a few, but I've never
performed. You know who you kind of remind me of a little bit is Doc Swan. You know, I just saw Doc performing also at Abbott's get-together, and it's a similar type of personality. I mean, not the same kind of act where he does, you know, the, of course, the glass walking and all that, you know, kind of a thing, but the other stuff that you're doing, you just kind of have that type of a personality.
I don't think I know that, man.
Yeah. So, well, how are you enjoying the convention? Since
this convention's great. I mean, it's very intimate.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of them, but all the shows are really good. The workshops have been great.
Yeah.
So I'm meeting a lot of new people. Mm-hmm. Plus, I since this is out of Austin, I do know a few people here, which is interesting because usually I don't know that many people at a convention.
Yeah, you're kind of a low-key guy and kind of in a different area where you don't get to really go to a lot of conventions.
It's my own touring, and so I haven't been at a lot of conventions because I'm working.
Yeah.
But these days I'm slowing up a little. I'm getting older, so I'm not touring as much. So I have a little more time, and plus with the COVID thing, I have a lot more time.
Yeah, we all. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate you spending a few words with us here.
No problem.
So that was Magical Mystical Michael. I got it. This is Scotty Yow. So we are here for the final evening gala, and it also includes dinner, and we are preparing for the dinner and then a show and then late night activities. So there are a lot of activities still remaining, but a couple people I wanted to introduce you to who actually need no introduction, but until you hear their voice, you won't know who they are. I have Scott and Judy Hollingsworth, both of whom are past presidents of the TAOM. Hello, Scott O.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. Judy.
Hello. Scott was president in 2009. I was president in 2016.
In Corpus Christi.
I was in Corpus Christi. He was in Houston because at the time we lived halfway between those two locations. And we were members of both clubs in both cities. The Corpus Christi convention was, in my mind, the best convention that's ever been at TAOM. Not because I was president, but because Scott was convention chairman. He put together a retrospective of the performers from Magic Island,
right,
which was the highlight of TAOM.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. That was a great convention. How are you enjoying this one? I mean, you were from Austin for a long time, and now moving back to Austin, Judy and Scott.
Yes, we moved to Austin 10 days ago. My house is a mess, as you can imagine. But we are back in Austin now, and we'll maintain our membership in the Houston clubs as well as the Austin clubs, which I have maintained all these years. The Austin Magic scene is very dynamic, and we're looking forward extremely much to getting involved and helping where we can.
How are you enjoying this convention compared to many other TAOM? Scott, you've been coming, I know, for like forever, it seems like, too.
Forever, yeah. Forever is right. The convention is very, very nice because it's compact, it's nice, it's a friendly deal because, they capped it off at 250 people, I think, and it's made it all very, very acceptable to everyone. Everyone is enjoying the camaraderie, and I think that basically it's a very family type of convention this year, and I think that is just wonderful for Magic.
TAOM has always been known for being a family convention. It's interesting you mention that because this year we are in COVID precaution. I mean, it's not that we're socially distancing. They're encouraging masks but not requiring masks. But I don't see as many youth here as in past TAOMs, and I'm wondering if that's because some families have decided, okay, we're not coming as a family, but couples have been coming, but I don't see the youth that we used to see here.
That's a concerning issue because of the lack of youngsters coming up in TAOM. I hope this year it is because of the COVID pandemic and because those people are registered for the virtual convention so that they are interacting and enjoying all of the activities. With a convention like this that has limited capacity, it is an extremely personal convention that I love. It's all the people I've known for a number of years, and we love it.
What has been your, I'll ask Scott, you first, and then Judy, what has been a highlight for you so far? I mean, here we're coming up on the final show of the evening, and we're going to be having then a lecture tomorrow, but it's been, for all intents and purposes, essentially about over. What so far has been something, Scott O, that you have enjoyed the most?
naturally, I always enjoy the close-up shows and the close-up.
Of course you do. You're the king of close-up here, man. You wrote the book on close-up restaurant magic.
Well, thank you. Thank
literally.
You. But I've enjoyed the close-up magic because it seems like to me it brings everybody together in the close-up rooms, and everybody enjoys that interaction with the audience. And to me, that's the highlight that I felt that was a very tense one.
Judy, what about you?
I've enjoyed mostly the contests because it gives me the opportunity to see the improvement from year to year. This year we had, I'm not sure of the number, but several contestants who were repeat contestants, and how their act has grown and improved, and the growth of the younger people and the improvement for the guys who've been doing it for years and years. It's been very enlightening.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you guys very much. Good to hear your comments. So glad to see you again here at this convention. And, you know, you were a couple of people who I have talked earlier on this podcast episode about conventions, how there are some people who only attend the TAOM. They don't really go to a lot of other conventions necessarily. And this is something that I know you guys wouldn't miss. And, again, you just moved in and you kind of put your move on hold just to be here instead of unpacking boxes. I would do the same thing. I wouldn't want to unpack boxes. I'd rather come down here and have some fun. But also, I know this is one of the only conventions where we can see you actually here.
Well, we like to get out and get involved, and this is our favorite convention because this is where we all grew up in.
Grew up,
and we grew up in this convention, and this is I look forward to this convention every year because of that one reason, is that it's all family. You know, we've all grown older, as I may add, but it's all because of the involvement that all of us have been involved in on the club level as well as the state level. And I really look forward to the TAOM each year.
I have a confession to make. I would go to TAOM regardless of who the big name performers were, just because of the people who are there that I've known for low these many years, and because they're my friends and I only see them once a year.
Yeah. Great. Thank you both very much for being here. And I think we're getting ready to serve us dinner. So for the Magic Word Podcast, here at the final gala event, and we're here at the President's Table. Actually, Bertel Fredstrom, I think, is still shaking hands. He's going to join us here momentarily. That was Judy and Scott Hollingsworth. Scotty out.